Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hey, it's Molly McAleer, and you are listening to Season 4 of Mother, May I Sleep With Podcast. All right, nacho experts. So you probably noticed when you opened up your app or whatever you listen to this podcast on this morning that at the end of the title, it says Part 1. That's right, we're going to start splitting episodes into two parts now. This is something that I really never thought that I would do. Mainly because it never occurred to me until a couple weeks ago. Because in my heart, when I started this podcast, I always wanted it to feel like a lot of the longer form television show recap podcasts that I really love. That's the kind of entertainment I really identify with as someone who likes to nitpick and obsess over things. But I'm realizing, you know, 4 seasons into this podcast, which is, you know, a little bit embarrassing for me as a creator, that this is very different than a lot of those shows, because this podcast, we do 2-hour movies, like 1 hour and 27 minute long movies. And we want to do them for forever. Whereas opposed to TV, there's maybe 24 episodes a year, maybe they're an hour long. So that's like 45 minutes running time. And then you get hiatus, there's breaks, there's a whole summer or whatever it is, you know, whatever the airing schedule is, there's several months off a year. The way that we set up this podcast, that's not the case. What we want to do is go year round. I know a lot of you can binge these episodes in a day, and I hear from a lot of people that they don't. They listen to it over the course of the week. Sometimes it can take them 2 weeks to finish an episode, which is great because then there's one right there waiting for them. But I think we should meet somewhere in the middle between me taking obnoxious amounts of time off, 2 or 3 weeks sometimes, and then hitting you with 3 or 4 episodes and taking another 2 weeks off. That's not really working for me either. And I think that the middle ground would just be to do splitting these really, really long episodes up into a part one and a part two. It'll never be longer than 2 parts, no matter how long we record the movie. I hope to God that we are able to keep these recordings under 4 hours, but that's still a lot of content. That's basically 90 minutes instead of one big fat 3-hour episode, and then I just fucking ghost on you. You know, I'm not your dad. I'm not your stepdad. I'm not, you know, that relative that left. I don't want to be that. I want to be here for you for as long as possible, for as many episodes as possible, forever. And I know that this might be an unwelcome change to a lot of people. I, as a consumer, don't love when things that are working for me change. But I think it's the right move for longevity, as I said, but also because this will allow me to create more. I know that this may seem like I'm scaling back, but in reality, if I spread out the airing schedule a little bit more, that's a lot more recording time. That's a lot more time to recoup and make sure that I get guests that are truly invested in this process. Not everyone, you know, can sign up for the process that this can be at times. But yeah, I really want to be able to create more Patreon episodes for you. We have like a few Patreon mini episodes up now. We just had Lewis Peitzman on one. I intend to record as many as possible. Now that I'm not like watching a movie 3 times every week and then taking copious notes and then basically like falling apart on the one Monday a month I take off. And what I would rather do is record less frequently and then record better. So the actual episodes will be better. And then because like there's a little bit more free time, I can create. And in a weird way, the more consistent we are with our episodes, that means that we can sell ads because we are consistent. And I know we have ads on this show already. And I appreciate that no one has brought up that we have a fair amount of ads. That means to me that you understand this is more than a hobby. To me, it's like a cracked out hobby. And the more that I can have consistency, the better chances are that I have good ads that can actually pay me enough that I can say, okay, I have to give even more time to this than I already am. That's the goal. More content, better content, maybe not delivered in the way that you're used to, but a season four change. We love a season four change. Okay. That's when we bring in the fun, kooky characters. In this case, it's not characters. It's just episodes separated into two parts. I'm nervous. I hope this is cool with you. I think it's cool. And I'm glad that I can start this on a TED Travel Stat episode, because if you're a fan of this show, and I know you gotta be if you've listened this far, if you're a fan of this show, TED Travel Stat is one of our greatest guests of all time. I don't feel bad saying that in front of the other guests. It's just the truth. Like, I was my grandmother's favorite grandchild. Everyone knew. We didn't need to worry about it. We could say it anywhere. Say it at the mall. Say it at Christmas dinner. I'm Nana's favorite. TED Travel Stat is my favorite. And I'm so excited that you guys get to hear the secrets of Hidden Lake. Here's part one. Oh, hey, everyone in America. It's me, Molly Caitlin McAleer, and this is The Secret of Hidden Lake with TED Travel Stat, return guest. Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. Happy to be here, as always.
I know. I'm so excited because you picked this movie out of a bunch that I sent you that included Finding Neverland, and then one that I didn't really look into, which... Nacho experts, I need you to let me know. Is the movie where the girl hits a boy and then never looks back really sad? Because it sounds really sad to me. Or it could be campy.
I watched a trailer, which was one of those not really a trailers. It's just the first like 3 minutes of the film.
Of course, whatever reason, yeah. You know? Well, that's all they have. No one's going to cut together any more than that. Like, they quit right after.
Exactly. And it was just the woman driving in the rain, getting distracted, hitting a small boy on a bike, getting out, just weeping uncontrollably while stroking his hair. Oh, I'm so sorry. And oh, I don't want to move you. I'll go get help. And it's just rain coming down. Everybody's very wet.
And she makes the choice to never, like, she's like, I'm going to leave this dead boy.
Well, I think what happened is that she, just the little I read about it is that she leaves to get help.
I love that I'm asking for your research on the other movie. Like, literally, how cheap am I that I'm like, so Ted, what'd you do on this other movie? Okay, keep going.
I only have four pages on that one. let's see. Let me go through the credits. She comes back. She goes to get help. She comes back. I don't know if she's gotten help, but there is a small crowd gathered, and they're just very angry, talking about whoever did this is you know the devil.
Oh, it's a hit and run movie.
Yeah. So she comes back to like own up. But then decides like, oh, this is a little more than I bargained for. So
that could be sad.
Yeah.
I need to like really fully watch that one. Like the Mary Kay Letourneau one was a huge mistake for me because I was like, oh, it'll be campy. Like Mary Kay Letourneau like fucks a student, like LOL.
Yeah.
Not funny. Movie was not a great pick for this podcast. So I was thinking maybe, but eating disorders have been fun here, and those are pretty serious.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's the serious subject matter can be portrayed in a way that is, if it's ham-fisted or over the top, then there's a comic effect.
Really?
You can't help it. I mean, the Finding Neverland was almost, I almost was like that's one, because it looked so campy in many ways, but I was like, this is also a tinderbox I don't want to step into.
Truly. Well, like, also leaving Neverland is about to, like, I hope.
Oh, was it leaving that?
Well, no, Finding Neverland is like the movie that I sent you, but like Leaving Neverland is the movie that they just came out with at Sundance. It's like all the tea, and it's like Wade Robson which, like, I don't want to talk about the America sliding door moment. I have set up for all of that. But it's like a lot of tea about Wade Robson and this other guy. And they, like, fully, like, told everything. Holy and, like, people moly. Were, like, leaving the... Like, they couldn't sit through the Q&A at Sundance because they were going to be, like, physically ill. And so that's coming to HBO. And
wow.
First of all, like, not happy about it. Thrilled about it, though. Can't wait. I love a good deep dive.
Absolutely.
And I feel like we need it. You know, every 15 years, I need some shit to be dug up on pretty much everyone. Yeah. I'm waiting for Brittany Murphy. Her dad just passed. And he was the one that was really keeping the whole thing alive.
Her dad?
Yeah.
Okay. I just read, maybe that's why it came up in the news again, but I know that her mom and her husband at the time, mm-hmm.
Maybe had some hanky-panky or something.
Well, I don't know, but it did all seem like super odd.
Although yeah, it's it was all very really odd.
Like not odd, but then like the situation itself, but then suddenly you're just
it
like,
was a lasagna.
With these people involved, how could it not be?
Yeah, it was like truly, it was like a lasagna for real. Like truly, like that's what it was. Is like, it was just like, okay, like this could be normal though, but like, oh, here's a, wow. Yeah. No, that like that case, we just did a whole thing on it on the Smush Room, which is another podcast I produced. We did a three part Brittany Murphy series. Holy I did the last moly. Two. And you guys should check it out. But anyway, let's get into what we came here for.
Yeah.
The Secret of Hidden Lake, which is The Secret of Hidden Late, written in my notes. There's a lot of fun surprises. One thing that you should know is that I feel like you and I are in a real role with always doing these sort of like great, like thriller movies.
Yeah.
Like no, like not too smushy, like nothing like too crazy, but these are like good thriller movies.
Yeah.
Like I did air quotes right there. That's what you didn't hear. Like I felt that I think the last moment was that The Secret Calligraphy. What was yeah, or the devil Devil's, the Devil's Teardrop.
Yes.
Devil's Teardrop, I think, was yes. my favorite. The pool one is probably tied with this. This one's, I think, pretty good.
It's, yeah. Yeah. Like, there weren't quite as many. I was hoping for a little bit more creepiness, a little bit more, maybe if, you know, but there was some creepiness that came in different ways than I was expecting.
It presented itself. It really, yeah. It truly was like being like flashed in the park at certain moments during this movie. Cause I was just like, whoa, like, oh no, I saw a homeless man's balls on Verdugo. Like just like, and I called the police. He looked like white Jesus. They were like, give me the description. And I was like, he had like white hair and they were like, was he like, what was his race? I was like, he looked white, but like he looked like Jesus, like white Jesus. And I've never seen, like everyone talks about seeing naked people in public. I had never seen a naked person in public before. And I was driving and I'm in my little like Mini Cooper. So I'm like low. And I see this man like sort of emerging out of a scene and he has like a... like a loincloth on him. This is at the Smart and Final off Verdugo in Glendale. And he like emerges with this loincloth and I like turn back and I'm like, oh fuck, that's balls. Like, and he was like really old. So like, they were like crazy ass balls. And like, I see.
Like knee length. Like.
Yeah. They were like really like, yeah, they were like very close to my mirrors for like a seven. He was like 6'7". Like he was so huge. So then
it's like a Sasquatch type.
I look exactly. So then I look behind me and like this guy in the car behind me is laughing. So I was like, fuck, like I am the one who has to pull over and call about this naked man, you know? So that's what this movie felt like a lot to me, where I just like there was moments where I was like, oh, all right. And there's like, I don't know, there's ghost dad elements. I think it's great.
Yeah, I think this podcast is like your call.
But
call to the police, basically. This is your chance.
So we opened up in a rural area and it's in sepia effect. I thought Willem Dafoe was in this movie for 15 minutes.
That you thought that was...
Well, I wasn't reading the credits with my eyeglasses on. So yes. I didn't have my eyeglasses on, so I thought it was Willem Dafoe.
And you saw Winston Record.
Yeah, and that's what I translated that to. So like this was totally the man that I was seeing when we opened up on this.
Okay. Yeah, which I can, yeah, without glasses, yeah, I can totally, he didn't speak a lot.
And also I can't really claim that, like, in a court of law, if someone was like, is that Willem Dafoe? I'd be like, I don't fucking know. Like, I really would, I can't comment. So we open up on this father and daughter in like the woods in a truck, and she's like nervously trying to open a thermos.
Yeah, that was excruciating.
She looks like Gypsy Rose. This child actress looks like Gypsy Rose, like before she got sick. Do you know what I mean? Or now?
Yeah.
Gypsy Rose Lee?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So I would say like she looks like her now, except she's 7 in this movie, which is like sad to say.
I hated her costume. I thought it was just
costume.
What they had, the getup.
It was like a vest thing, like like a vest with a dress with a collar. Am I wrong?
Maybe it was so bad that I can't remember. It was baggy and ill fitting, and like looked like just a lot of things in this movie looked like you could just see them picking them out off the rack, or like putting the extra in place, or saying, okay, go now.
For sure filmed in Canada. Like, oh, she's absolutely a local hire for sure. Yeah. So like they're on a budget. They're like scrimping and saving.
Yeah, I'm not going to ping them on that. I mean, I get it, but
like, no. There's no snobbery here. Like, literally, I had one of my favorite guests on this show called what I figured was like probably a 5-star plus resort. She was like, what's that, La Quinta N? And now I feel redeemed, so we can shame anyone we want, because I'm fucking humble, honey. Okay. One thing I've realized about myself, by the way, let's just take a brief break. Between the thermos and the next scene with the thermos, to say that when I say I bleed for you guys, I literally am wearing my Taylor Swift Reputation long sleeve white shirt underneath my Selena Quintanilla Perez sweatshirt. And earlier, I slipped over a laundry basket while I was holding my computer, and I sacrificed my elbow and I'm bleeding right now.
Wow.
I am from my elbow heavily, and I bandaged it up and I'm doing great. But I just want you to know, it could have been my notes, or I guess me not bleeding right now tonight, because I saved that computer. I gripped it.
Wow.
And I held it up like a hero.
Yeah. Like it could have been your elbow.
Like, I'm Magpie myself.
You are.
I am Magpie.
Yeah, totally.
You guys will find out who Magpie is in 3 seconds.
The fact that she couldn't, like, just sit in the car and pour the coffee there. Like, they made her get out, leave the door open.
Like, thermoses are hard to open that era.
And she's a child.
I actually have like an old school thermos. If like we want to later do like some like sport, like a little like X Games outside opening thermoses, like, yeah, we get, it's hard. They're not easy to open.
And then to pour a boiling hot liquid and walk it over around the truck to your dad, knowing that you probably already made the coffee too strong.
Yeah. So she like, he takes a sip and he goes, thanks, Magpie. She's like, it's too strong, isn't it? And he goes, can't call it a cup of coffee unless the spoon stands up by itself. I love that.
Yeah. He made a small grunt when he took a sip.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, she interpreted that as I failed, the failure, you know. But
that's why she became so driven later in life.
Well, and then you notice, I mean, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but when it cuts to her later,
yeah,
she is quite the coffee hound.
No, well, we're gonna have to like do a lot of cut to laters in this movie, because I also was trying to predict the crime in real time throughout my notes, and it's a ride. So there's a lot of like cut to laters In my notes anyway.
Yes, I have a bunch of bolded cut twos.
So. I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
So he like takes her out a bit into the woods and teaches her how to shoot a shotgun at a bird, right? There's like some bird.
Yes, they didn't show you. You don't see it at first. You're like, it could be a deer. It could be anything.
A human.
I thought it could be even like just a bottle on a stump, like, you know, like
that would be ideal.
Yeah.
Like a can.
I was hoping, but yes, it turns out to be a bird.
But she can't do it,
mm-mm,
right? She doesn't have it in her. And the bird flies out and he goes, Maggie, next time, why don't you bring your camera? And like, at first she feels a little bit rejected, but then she's like, okay, mm-hmm. Like, yeah, Dad and I agree. Bring a camera next time.
Yeah, it's like she can't. It feels a little patronizing to me, but then I think she's young enough where that's not. She doesn't really read it that way, and it's more like relieved. You know, like I don't have to care because he's like, give me that.
And thankfully, that didn't catch up to her later in life. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like she seemed to be doing fine with not being able to shoot a gun, which is a good feeling to have.
Yes.
Right? Like,
absolutely.
You should never just be like, okay, I'm fucking so comfortable picking up a gun. Whatever, your rights, your choice, whatever, your fucking gun, your nightstand, your choice. But, like, I don't want to pick up a gun. So she wanders off a little bit into the woods. And I wrote, this makes me very nervous that her dad's going to kill her right off.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because he's like, stay in my eye line. And I'm like, well, I'm like, well, because why not? You're just going to let a bullet loose into the woods? Like,
stay where I can see you.
I'd be like, walk that way. Like, walk everywhere behind me. I'll drive to the least interesting point, and then you walk back that way.
But like, only stay in front of me.
Just stay in front of me,
relax.
But in my eye on. Like, it's so crazy. So then she finds a feather.
She finds one feather.
And then she finds another blood-soaked feather. It's not soaked.
I did a little research on those feathers. They look like golden eagle tail feathers.
They're not bald American eagle feathers?
Well, I mean... They could be, but
when I didn't look up any feathers.
I did a little feather research, but it actually tracks later in the story. I have 7 pages of feather photos. Kind of a feather guy here.
I'm a feather guy too. Okay, so what happened?
Then a chimney sweep grabs her from behind, basically.
Yeah, okay, so this man is like, I literally did not know what was going on here. I was like, I didn't know what statement was being made. And it looks like chimney, like soot, or it looks like a person with darker skin tone. You don't realize because this entire scene is sepia.
Exactly.
I can't stress that enough.
Doesn't lend it. Well, it didn't. I mean, it's funny because I think, I don't know if they did this on purpose. If so, it's a little clever because later on we learn something about that man.
This man.
And so it's like, because you just think, oh, that's these dirty hands, you know?
Right, right. Right away, it struck me. It struck me right away. I couldn't not. It was very interesting. So now we're in Chicago, Illinois. 20 years quickly, later, Illinois.
Yes, that's what I wanted. Okay, I just wanted to correct you quickly on that. No, but he says, he puts his, the guy grabs her and says...
Oh, shit. Sorry, Ted. I forgot to fucking drop the mic on that. Tell me.
No. Just he says, you know, what's
Tell
your
me
name?
Where you live. What's your name? She's like, Maggie Dolan. She gives the address and he's like, I can find you anytime and I can kill everyone you love. What we don't know is that this is extra sad for young Maggie.
Yes. And he says, he calls her Angel and says,
Angel, I don't like that.
No, it did not.
I didn't like that. It felt like an odd touch to me. Like
no,
he's sinister
yeah.
or something. No. So now we're in Chicago 20 years later. We're outside of a family advocacy center where Maggie Dolan is now a grown woman helping humanity. We're going to meet a lot of people in this next scene. We're going to meet Maggie's coworker, Barb, who doesn't want to pick up the phone.
Mm-mm.
And then we're going to flash forward to, or just like the next scene is going to be Alice, the neighbor Alice, and then we're gonna hear the father's doctor, and then a guy named Judge, who I assume is a judge.
Judge Landers.
And then we're packing a lot into this, and then we're gonna learn that Alice is not very pleased with Maggie in the way she's handled the last 20 years of her life. So let's go from 422 to 833.
He's your landlord. Doesn't mean he can come into your apartment anytime he wants. You and your children have as much right to privacy as everyone. No, that is not true. No, he cannot evict you. Okay, you know what? Here. There is a locksmith about a block away from your building. Yes. Tell him that Maggie from the center sent you. Okay, do you have a pen? She's really sick this time. I don't know, some sort of virus. It's not even the point, you know. No, she's getting back on her feet. Can't you just let the rent slide for 2 weeks? I don't think that's unreasonable.
Family Advocacy Center, this is Barb. Can I help you?
Ben,
hang on.
Maggie.
Alice Crandall? She says it's about your dad.
Oh, Maggie. So glad you're here.
I did. Aunt May prescribed us.
What was he doing out there?
It's deer season, Maggie. Maybe he wanted to get an early start.
He didn't tell anyone he was going.
A couple of hikers heard the shot, found him. He said it looked like he got tangled up in some brush. Gun must have gone off when he fell.
The bullet passed just below the rib cage. Penetrated the chest cavity. Here.
It also nicked the portal vein, which is why blood loss was so significant. If those hikers hadn't come along when they did...
Is he going to live?
Your father's a strong man, Miss Dolan. The fact that he made it through surgery is a good sign. The next 48 hours will be crucial.
Hey.
Judge.
Hi. It's good to see you, kiddo.
You said you were out of town.
Got back as quick as I could. Any change?
Doctors say all we could do is wait.
I've known your father for over 30 years. He's been through a lot. He'll come through this, too.
Did he say anything about going out for deer season?
Not to me. As far as I know, Frank hasn't been hunting in years.
I know. First thing he taught me was always tell someone where you're going, especially if you're alone.
Just have to ask him when he wakes up. Meantime, why don't you take Alice on home? Get some rest. I'll call if anything changes.
Thanks.
Wow, this place has really changed. Everything looks so tidy, like a postcard.
You can't stay away for all those years and expect everything to just stop. Things change. It's how it is, whether you like it or not.
Are you all right?
Thank you, Dolan. I've known you since you were born. Your mother was like a sister to me. Before she died, I promised I'd help your dad look after you.
Alice.
Well, I guess I missed the boat. If something like this had to happen before you come back home.
It's late, and we're both tired, so...
You couldn't even be here for his retirement.
I wanted to.
You wanted to? You know how much that meant to him? 23 years, he was sheriff.
Alice, I had a job. I couldn't just drop everything. People need me there.
People need you here.
Okay.
I mean, this left me reeling, really, the whole movie, wondering what the relationship Alice had with her dad.
Thank you. So, like, this is one of those, like, you read it on Reddit, like, sort of like, yeah, my dad started fucking, like, my mom's best friend after she died. Like, it actually wound up working out okay. Like, she's really cool. My mom would have approved of it. Like, this is absolutely what is going on this whole movie, and no one ever addresses it. And, like, Alice is so involved and so emotional about all of this. And, like, just to think if Alice is, like, a sad... I mean, I hate to use the word spinster, but, like, I feel like that's the implication almost in this movie.
Absolutely.
To think that she's that and she cares about this man this much and isn't getting laid kills me.
Yeah. And the fact that, like, you know, I mean, I could watch a movie from Alice's point of view.
I would love that would be my shit. Wait, so can, like, one thing I want to back up is that if you guys are, like, watching this on Lifetime Movie Club, the Rena Sofer, whatever this actress is, she's from California, Arcadia. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. I dated a shoe salesman from Arcadia when I was 20 years old. I went to Occidental College, not far from here. She is, like, very pretty. And in the Lifetime original movie, Lifetime Movie Club, her picture, the still that they chose for her was very unflattering. And I will say, it influenced my choice when I was picking these movies.
Is it up on your screen right now?
I'll show you right now. Yeah. I just have to search the word secret in Lifetime Movie Club, which will bring me down to literally, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9 movies with the word secret in the title.
Yes, this director,
but, like, oh, wow. This is, like, not a flattering picture of her. And I would say that this woman, sorry, because I've been watching it, but yeah, this woman, no, like, looks like Neve Campbell meets, like, Courtney Cox for sure. And she's super beautiful, Black Irish, and, like, I don't know why they made her look
so stern. Like, she
looks like a potato. It's not flattering. Potato, yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? Like it would be the angle that if that was me and I was doing approvals, I'd be like, dog, no.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I'd be like, can you get me, like, because she's so, like, there's never, I saw the moment that it was in this movie, and I'll try and point it out.
Oh, wow.
If we see it, but I saw it and I was like, this is the worst moment to take a screenshot, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, Alice is, like, putting a lot on Maggie right now.
Yeah, it's really not the right. Her father is, and then I think that's something that when, you know, I don't want to go off on a tangent, but I think that the dad, like, we don't really, I as a viewer didn't feel the kind of angst. I didn't feel like he was on, like, he could go either way throughout the film.
Right.
It's apparent that she does, and a lot of people, you know, he might not make it, you know.
And right.
She's very anxious about that. It didn't hit me in that way, but that being the case, it's not the right time for Alice to bring this stuff up.
It's not the right time as well. And also, like, I feel I have a whole thing later on that I want to talk about, just about how, like, you know, you shouldn't want a young woman or a young anyone to, like, be tied to home. Like, it's a great thing that she went out. Now, I come back on this later where I feel like Magpie is a dangerous narcissist. But, like, truly, like, there's some shit going on with Magpie. But, like, well, yeah, her dad called her Magpie, if I didn't tell you guys that. This is not a me thing. That's a dad thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So Maggie and Alice return home, and Alice is like, listen, there's been a few times now where your dad, he's just gone off. And, like, to me, I say, let's test him for dementia. Right?
Yeah.
He's just retired. He's just going off and not telling anyone. And that's against everything he believes in. He tells everyone every time he goes hunting. That's, like, the first rule of hunting.
Yes. Right? And all this has happened since he retired. So it's like, you know, guy's retired.
Starting to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you got it. That's when you check in on your friends and relatives, mm-hmm, right? In mm-hmm. times of hardness and retirement. So Alice insists on walking home. She could use the air.
Again, walking home in the dark, like, you know, after a long day at the hospital. I can just picture her, like, you know. It's
elderly people in the community are not doing great. My great aunt's name was Alice. We drove Alice everywhere. You fucking drive Alice up to her door and you walk her inside.
Yeah.
Alice, any Alice.
Absolutely.
Like, walk them inside.
You just don't even question it.
Cat, dog, baby, like adult human, like you just fucking walk them inside. So Maggie notices upstairs that one of her dad's shotguns is missing. And she looks at her desk and like everything is pictures of her mom and her family. So we're clear on the fact that like dad loves the fam.
Then
Maggie goes and talks to the judge the next day. Her dad isn't making any progress. Then we flash back to the house, and Maggie's like, why isn't there any food in the house? And then Maggie's dad, as a ghost, sort of, what would you call him, a vision?
Yeah, I wrote down a vision. She has a vision, but I got to say, and it was interesting format, but it was very confusing at first.
Because he's alive, right?
A, he's alive. B, like, it, okay, I started to realize, oh, this is how they're going to do flashbacks. But at first I was like, is this a current? Because in this first time that it happens,
right,
he's injured. She's like, you broke up a bar fight, didn't you? And there are domestic altercations or what.
He's like, I would rather break up three bar fights than one more domestic violence incident. And it's like, well, what the fuck does that mean? And because she's like, you have a bunch of young deputies under you, like send the deputies out to like handle the physical fights. Which,
granted, domestic violence altercations are the most dangerous police activity.
Absolutely.
But that's really
the way that he pitches it is like, I personally care so much about domestic violence that like I would do three bar fights every day before one more battered wife.
That's
how I took it.
No, that's a good I wish I had to take, I took it more as like, those are a doozy. Well, maybe because he was crouching over in pain and I was just like,
yeah,
because
then
it was
she
confusing.
Goes, let me see. And I was like, so like at one point she goes, let me see. And he's like, no, I got it, magpie. And like, he starts to walk out the door after his like whole thing. And it's like, well, what did you want to see? Like a pulled muscle? Like, it's or what really happened?
Bruising.
Like a stab wound or something. But yeah, so basically like during this flashback, it starts out by him being like, she's like, why isn't there any food in the house? And he's like, because the food always goes bad. And she's like, you have to stop eating in the diner. So she immediately engages with Ghost Dad. And that's the other thing. It's not Ghost Dad starring Bill Cosby. It's literally like, she just is interacting with this man that's still alive. And Ghost Dad was very present in the moment, believe it or not. So she's like, he's like, Sam's gonna buy the diner. Is this where this happens? Yeah, she's like, Sam's gonna buy the diner. And he goes, well, if he wants to sling hash the day he dies, that's his problem. And I'm like, yo, like, I don't know who Sam is, but like, congratulations to Sam for buying a diner. Right?
Absolutely.
Right, like, why? And I understand, like,
it's okay. Huge. Being a small business owner is not easy.
Yeah. So then like, okay.
But quickly, then you realize that this is flashback dialogue being applied to being in the moment.
Yeah.
So that's why it's confusing. Cause you're like, clearly Sam's had the diner for a while now.
It takes a couple beats to like, for me, like it took like, I was like, okay, wait, okay. Like I actually like wrote out my thought process in the notes, but like this is what this whole movie is. It makes you do a lot of mental work, which is like not a great, like I'm in Mexico. Like our hotel happens to be at Lifetime. Like I'm fucking drunk and I just want to like lay out and watch a movie. This is not the movie. It asks a lot of you as a viewer.
Yes.
So we find out that like Sam's a big loser and he goes, we'll need to talk before, he goes, you'll need to talk before you leave. So like, that is what I guess kind of informs us that maybe she's like about to leave for college. So then we see the next day, a guy who I guess is Sam comes up to the house holding a couple of coffees. He turns back around like he's about, he made a big mistake. Like, oh, why'd I come all the way with these like, and I'm like, he better own that diner because those seem like expensive coffees, right? Yeah. Unless they're just, I mean, they're really big.
They're very large, but it always bugs me when I put that, let's see. Oh, you can always tell when a prop cup is empty.
Because it's so empty. It's a
very small pet peeve of mine, but they're very big and it's very like,
Haley Duff is a bad cup actress and we've dealt with that on the show before. Cup acting is not easy and I just don't understand why they don't put water in it.
Exactly.
Just like give it a little weight. Like you can throw some food coloring in there. We'd all buy it.
Yeah.
It helps the actor.
Put a roll of dimes in there.
Right.
You can see it.
Put some dimes in there. Exactly right. Like put some steaks in it. So we're gonna act out a scene a little bit later so everyone can find out what a terrible actress I am. But so Maggie's like, hey, wait a minute. Like, what are you doing here? Are those coffees for me? So I wrote, this is very standard for Lifetime. The loser from back home that's so good for you, but also so wrong. And then he asked her about the dad. She's like, no progress. And then she invites him in, but he's like, I got to get home. I got to go back to the diner. So then...
for the breakfast rush.
Yeah. I wrote, I don't know if I want to know what went down between these people. And I think it's odd that Maggie is a family advocate but calls Sam a loser essentially for running a diner. That's a job she'd probably be thrilled if any of her clients got to climb to, but Sam is a loser for working there long enough that he can afford to buy it. So like, that's basically my thoughts on Maggie.
Yes.
Like Sam's a loser because he owns a diner. Like that's fucking sick. I would love to own a diner.
Especially we cut there later and
it's a premier restaurant in town.
Yeah,
and like it's
her
a little
every
bit
every meal there. I see a little jealousy possibly.
I think going Maggie's on jealous of the diner. Yeah. So Maggie's sitting bedside at her father's hospital. After the nurse checks on him, she goes into another conversation with Ghost Dad. Basically, they're cutting right back to after she left for college, before she went, or after she left college, but before she went to the city. So now we know that she and her dad are kind of like reliving moments, right? That are pivotal.
Yes.
So her dad is doing what I consider to be very selfish parenting, where he's being like, you know, you can stay back here for the summer. You know, you should really be here. But at the same time, because like she has this job she needs to take, right? Like she's like, Dad, I gotta go. I got a job,
it's
right?
A great job.
But Dad's like, you gotta stay back. But now, like knowing what I know, with Homie being almost dead in that coma, like time is limited in this life. Like maybe you gotta spend some time with the fam. Like that really tested my emotional, you know, situation.
Oh no, it got me thinking because. I think especially in this town, it's very easy, at least maybe just for myself, trying to work in the entertainment business and write and do that kind of stuff. It's very much like wanting to be available for the work if it's going to be, it comes. And so you can very much, you sacrifice, like take a vacation. It's okay. Go away. You have to live your life.
When you're like really struggling though, which I don't think Magpie is doing in Chicago, but like I do think this is what kind of informed my opinion about this is like, I remember looking at my mom and being like, Mom, every time I open my email, my life changes. Like whether nothing comes or something comes or like an opera, like every time I open my email, my life changes. And like, that is what that means to me. Like when I'm on the computer doing this thing or doing that thing, like there's never a moment in my life where there is an opportunity. Right. Or like there, I'm not learning about like whatever. And like, so my mom would have definitely, I feel like been a, like very anti Magpie's dad, whose name I never bothered to learn.
Frank.
Thank you. Yeah. So like Frank is very like, I don't know. Frank is very anti-dream, very pro-fam.
Yeah, and I don't know if and we don't really learn anything about Maggie's mother passing away.
No.
Except that she had
nada.
She passed away right before this incident in the woods happened.
Yeah.
But
throat got slit, cancer, we don't know.
Yeah.
Car crash.
I would think that it informs Frank's kind of selfish parenting.
Mm-hmm. Keep it close. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, you think maybe, you know, he would have worked through some of that stuff in the widow support group.
I only think, like, because of the dork that Alice is, that, like, mom must have been an okay person. Because Alice is, like, a pretty big dork for mom to have been, like, the Audrey Hepburn of town. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, she's not Norma Jeaning in that shit. She's just, like, regular-ass mom. She's not Anna Nicole Smith. Like, this is... She's just mom.
Yeah.
Like, I think she died of a terminal illness.
Yeah.
We're going to catch back up with Alice at the gas station. She seems to be on the other side of things now. After the conversation with Ghost Dad, Alice has totally flipped her opinion, unbeknownst to the conversation with Ghost Dad. And she's saying, like, none of this is your fault, Maggie. Your dad getting shot has nothing to do with you. So then a guy covered head to toe in grease. Like, literally, like...
And we're not in sepia anymore.
No, this is, like, like, a theater production level of grease that he's covering. It's like, hey, if you guys don't know that this man works in cars, this is, like, so... This is, like... Yeah, no, this is absolutely not it. So, he's incredibly shy. He can barely make contact with Alice or Maggie. We'll pick up here, go really quick to the scene after that, with Alex explaining Jack and the legend of his father. And then things are going to really pick up once Maggie gets home and spots the sheriff in her driveway. So it's 1445 to 1827. My favorite quote from this is, honey, nobody looked.
Nobody looked?
Honey, nobody looked. That's the quote. Just wait for it. It'll pop up and fault shake Maggie. Your corner.
Morning, Miss Crandall.
Jack. Thought today was your day off.
Yeah, I'm getting in some overtime before school starts.
Jack starts college next semester. Got a full scholarship to their automotive training program.
Congratulations.
Jack Ford, this is Maggie, Sheriff Dolan's daughter.
Oh, Sheriff got me this job.
Oh, you got yourself this job, and don't you forget it.
Okay. It's nice to meet you.
Me too. That name sounds so familiar. I feel like I should remember it.
Oh, you're thinking of his father, Jack Ford Sr. Your dad had a few run-ins with him over the years.
Dad didn't talk about work much when I was little.
Meanest man I ever met. Get himself all liquored up, start fights, bust up half the town. But that wasn't the worst of it.
What do you mean?
Your dad would bring Ford in, but he never stayed in jail more than a few days. And then he'd go home and beat up his family.
Oh, my God.
Start with his wife. Work his way down. Jack Jr., he's the oldest. He caught more than his share.
Is it still going on?
It was. Till Ford disappeared about a year ago.
Disappeared?
Drove out of town one fine day. Nobody's seen him since.
No one could find him?
Did you see that boy? Those kids grew up battered and scared, told they were too stupid to amount to anything. Now, you look in his eyes and you see hope, you see future. Couldn't find him? Honey, nobody looked.
It's all right, Maggie. Nothing's changed. That's not why we're here.
He's all right?
It's just the sheriff just... She needs to ask you a few questions.
What about?
It wasn't an accident, Maggie.
Someone shot your father. We're checking the rifle for prints. Didn't sound right to me from the beginning. Frank knows his way around a gun as well as anybody.
How do you know it wasn't an accident?
I looked at the doctor's report this morning. Given the angle of the wound, the trajectory of the bullet, even falling down, there's no way he could have shot himself. Did he mention any problems recently? Something out of the ordinary? Phone calls? Mail?
No, but he talked to one of you before he'd ever say anything to me.
Truth is, Maggie, he hasn't had much to say to anybody for the last few weeks. We thought you might know if there was something on his mind.
Alice said he's been going off by himself lately. Be gone all day and never say where.
I'll speak to Alice. If you think of anything, give me a call.
I will. Who would want to kill him?
Do a job like that for 23 years? Not everybody's going to love you for it.
So, just such a, what do you call it when someone's a lion in disguise like that? Like, he's such a shapeshifter. Like, you just know he's like,
yeah.
Like, but you don't know yet. Like, you're like, oh, what a safe, comfortable man. But then when you see him, like, when even when he's in his office later on with his hat off, his little, like, cap for everyone at home, he's wearing a cowboy hat. He is a liar.
And his specialty is gaslighting. He
major notes about gaslighting. And this whole fucking community did everything they could to hold this woman down. So this unfortunately falls into like a very common new theme for this, where it's always kind of been a theme, but we're doing this more than ever, which is just like poisoning a woman from the inside when she enters into an unreal situation. We see this a lot with Hayley Duff. That seems to be her like main thing. But like with this movie in particular as well, they're like, you sure you're not seeing stuff? And she's like, what the fuck? Like, yeah, and I feel like I've been in moments like that when I'm on mushrooms, like where I'm like, yo, like fucking stop telling me something's not the way. And I'm a grounder. Okay. Like, it's not normal. Like, I know when something's not normal. So, like, this is how I truly felt for her. Because I was like, yo, like, if I was on mushrooms and everyone in town was telling me that, like, I was not knowing the truth about my dad's shooting, I would lose my mind.
Yeah.
You know, like, regular style. But, like, that felt like being on mushrooms to me watching this movie.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
You know what
I
mean?
Yeah.
So, honey, nobody looked. I wrote, I'm obsessed with the sheriff's car. I can spot the make and model on it, but it looks like a late 80s or early 90s Ford. LMK, if you're a car expert and you watch this, because I want to have that car and I want to paint it like that. That could be a cute weekend sheriff's car moment for me.
Absolutely.
So my go-to thought is that her dad has this man chained up in the woods since his retirement and has been torturing him.
That was your...
My go-to.
Oh, okay.
Was like, daddy's got this man chained up in the woods and has been torturing him. Like, and I knew it was a wild thought, but like, I also was like, we got to go wild. Like, this is Buck Mountain. Literally, it's called Buck Mountain. We got to go there. Dude, Ted, when I saw this was called Buck Mountain, like, I literally had to spend my day trying to like finish these notes and not make memes all day. Like, Buck Mountain, you guys meme the shit out of Buck Mountain. Like, that is my... You know what I mean?
It like, really is the first
thing. And when you tie in the mushrooms and everything else, like, what's going on in Buck Mountain? Like, ritual torture, mushrooms, like, fucking your dad who has, like, who's going senile, this Jake boy covered in grime, Alice. What is Alice doing on Buck Mountain?
If I encountered Alice, the first time I did mushrooms was in the mountains, and the beginning of it was just, it was too much for me. I was just too, like, you know, I was just wasn't expecting the intensity of it.
No, it's a lot.
And being in nature and being in the trees, breathing and just, you know, and my friend luckily was much more grounded and much more used to that type of thing. And he was just like, it's all right, dude. But we were walking.
Truth is, audience at home, just say if your friend is ever freaking out, just be like, man, everything's going to be okay. It's all right. Because it is okay.
It is okay.
No matter what's going on, it's fucking okay. Like, unless you're seizing on the ground, it's cool.
Yeah. It's just different. It's just different. You're just in a different place.
Yeah. Okay. So sorry. Keep going.
No, this one small part where we were walking in the mountains and we came upon these two men. One of them is sitting on a stump or something, holding his foot and grimacing and just said, have you seen a ranger? And I feel like that's would have, like, encountering Alice, because I just had to. I think I ran. Like, I was just, I couldn't deal with, like, the reality of that situation.
Right.
Was just too, I mean, I felt like an infant. Like. Right.
Have you seen a ranger? It's so earnest. So
clearly somebody's in trouble or, you know, hurt, maybe just a twisted ankle or something. But, like, I mean, it was, that was just too, yeah, I just bolted, I think.
So
I,
you know. Maybe the dad is torturing this guy on Buck Mountain.
Yeah.
But then we come up on the hospital. Oh, wait, sorry. What were you going to say?
No, I was curious. I got briefly lost. Because we know that, because Alice explains that that he disappeared, correct? Mm-hmm. That's what Honey knows.
He goes, go away for a day and then come back.
But she also, Jack Sr., which is the father of that.
Evil boy. Mm-hmm. Good
boy, evil man. That's the Honey Nobody Looked is when she's talking about the dad disappearing, right? Like,
yeah.
Jack Sr. gone. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's when you came to the conclusion that maybe.
Yeah, because I was just like, oh, everyone knows this. They want this evil man driven out of town. I was like, well, we know from the woods that there was a man, seems 2 and 2, right?
Yeah.
And then, well, this man's, like, gone, and now the dad's possibly mentally ill and shot. Maybe he's been torturing him in the woods for years.
I don't think it's a bad guess.
So we come up on the hospital, and then a reporter jumps on her, and this is the scene we're going to act out.
Yes.
It's Zach Roth, a reporter with the Herald. So when we open up, you can see his messenger bag. Is it still in a side hall? Like, he's in the side hallway when we come up on it. So he was waiting for her, and I don't know why this upset me so much, but it did. Like, I know how...
This ambush?
I know how paparazzi works. I know how reporters work. But I was still like, oh my God. Like, have some, like, just, like, niceness about you.
Have some tact.
have some niceness. Some
new, yeah. Like, I've dealt with... I was a fact checker for a number of years, so I know...
I bet.
In fact, I don't know if we've talked about this.
Were you a fact checker for what?
For Vanity Fair. So I worked with Nancy Jo.
No, Nancy Joel Sales? Oh, yes. My God. I love her.
On a number of stories.
Her book is in my infrared sauna right now, the internet one.
She was great. I really liked her. We had a nice relationship, working relationship, and friend relationship, became friends. But she was a good reporter, and this guy wasn't.
No. Wait, so did you do like the bling ring stuff?
No, I think it was, I think it might have been, I can't remember.
You passed away.
This is a flashback. This is Ghost Ted.
Yeah.
Ghost Ted.
I would hope. Honestly, that'd be so cool. Like, if I had been accidentally inviting a ghost on my pod for 3 years and that you showed up. And for that, I thank you. In a new jacket and everything.
Yeah. Hey, look, it's the least I could do. I worked on the, she did a piece about Randy and Evie Quaid.
That was a great piece. Yeah.
And
Randy Quaid was on a good one. That's right. I wrote shitty things about that, like 300 word things about that.
When he was doing gossip, went into Canada and couldn't come back.
There
was a few. I think a thing about Twitter early on. I think it might have been when I joined Twitter. But that might not have been her.
You know what's cool is like Randy Quaid could have been this guy because this is, I think, filmed in Canada. He was stuck there.
Oh, yeah.
Seemed like, honestly, not on the wrong beat.
It was just a little early. 2006.
They predicted it. Sick. Everyone's like, oh, the Simpsons predicted it. They actually kind of did, though, right? But did they? Everything.
Oh, yeah.
The Simpsons predicted everything. Yeah. They're like, oh, 9/11, everything.
I think smart comedy can very mirror culture and predict culture, kind of get ahead of things pretty easily.
Do you think we're living in Black Mirror? Like, truly, are we on the same timeline, do you think?
Like as that kind of as the show or
so like the theory. Do you watch Black Mirror?
I haven't seen Bandersnatch or whatever that.
No, so you don't have to. So like, but basically couple, they say yeah. Like the entire universe technically like takes place in the same time span.
Okay.
Which is like really weird to think about because like we're so caught up to so many ideas on the show.
Yeah.
Are we going to die tonight? I literally, though, I do wonder, like, we're so fucking caught up. And Elon Musk said it best on Joe Rogan, baby. He said we needed to slow down a while ago. And it's true. It's true. We are in troubled times, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
That's like why I'm so glad I don't have kids. Like, if I like have a child later, I'd like totally take that back. I
feel that way.
I like feel so that way. Like, I just am like, why would I? And then like sometimes I hear my friends like be like, oh, like that's why sometimes I feel bad about having kids. I'm like, yeah, dog, it's too late. Like, you had them, though. You know what I mean? I went to Japan. You had kids. I don't know how many times I'm going to have to bring that up on this podcast. Go to Japan. Have kids. You pick. Culture. Whatever.
Yeah.
So, basically, we are in the hospital. Zach Roth jumps on her, right?
Mm.
And he's like, the hospital won't tell me anything about your dad. I was hoping maybe you could. She's like, there's nothing to tell. So he's like, can I just ask you a few questions? I hate how sleazy he is. I literally, like,
Snoopy?
I also... Yeah. Wait, no, Zach, wait, who? Wait, what'd you call him, Judy?
No. You said I hate how Snoopy he is?
No, sleazy he is.
Oh, sleazy,
but he
yes.
is also Snoopy.
He is...
Like, he is Snoopy. I wish he was Snoopy. Oh, my God. I wish. Oh, my God. That'd be so great.
If this just turned into the Peanuts movie for, like...
Like,
just,
literally 20...
Just for the scene? Just, like, Snoopy? I would.
I'd lose my mind.
I would really. I
10
I
out
would
of 10.
Happy.
Great movie. So he's like, he's like, basically like, come on, just like sit down with me. She is like caught off guard and like, I don't blame her. Right.
Well, what is she has? She has no inkling that there could. Her father is beloved in this town.
As far as she knows.
As far. Yes.
And like, also like, you know, not everyone's used to like press opportunities. Like, not everyone knows you can just say no, you know. Mm-hmm. People mm-hmm. like, you know, Yeah. Someone says, do you want to comment? And you're like, well, no, but like, let me comment on that comment. Like,
well, yeah, people don't realize that, like, oh, I'm just having a discussion is also, it's because it has a lot of different levels of, like, you know.
And Snoopy never, like, turned on, we'll just call him Snoopy. Snoopy never turned on his recorder at any point. So Snoopy had his recorder running.
Yeah.
Which you know, is, which.
This oof, guy's ethics.
That unnerved me because I was like, oh, I would like to think I'm not being recorded, like, via tape recorder while someone's asking me if I want to talk about my dying father in a hallway. But anyway, he's like, yeah, so your dad grew up here. She's like, yeah, my grandparents moved here when it was an old mining town. He's like, your dad went to Colorado State and then he became a deputy. She's like, yeah. And then after, so like, by the way, he's not asking her questions. He's making statements.
It's like a true or false.
It's really like know. He's, and that was like, this is like when I started to think like, fuck, you gotta never talk to people. Like that was literally, my reaction to this was like, be like aware of whether or not someone's asking you a question or leading you into a statement, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was an interrogation. It was like a court. It was like she's on the stand, you know.
No, it truly was. And like also, yeah, oh my God, yeah. So we'll get into the court ethics of all this later. So he's like, is there any reason in particular you chose to move to Chicago? And she's like visibly uncomfortable and this seems to please him. And she's like, there was a job opportunity there I couldn't pass up. So let's lead in with you, Ted, say as Snoopy, saying so this has nothing to do with your father then, and I'll be playing the part of Magpie.
Okay, great, fantastic. So it has nothing to do with your father then?
What do you mean?
Well, you must be aware of the allegations that your father flagrantly misused his position while he was sheriff.
Excuse me?
I have a source who accuses him of abusing prisoners while in custody.
What? No.
Says he had a personal agenda. What amounted to a vendetta.
Wait a minute.
I received some letters that make some very serious charges.
I've got to go.
Obviously, your father's in no condition to, but I thought if you cared to make a statement, Miss Dolan, it's the best way to help your father to clear this up. Look, I can run this story with you or without you. It's your choice.
So then, okay. Oof. By the way, killer read, Ted.
I was a little over the top, but look, you know, I'm having fun. So,
so Magpie is talking to the judge and is upset, rightfully. And she says that Roth, he has the proof in these letters. Okay. And then the judge is like, no, everyone's seen those letters. Okay. It looks like they were signed by an 8-year-old. which like to me is like, well, that's interesting. If like a slightly illiterate, like barely literate person is writing these notes, I'd be like, well, what's his.
Or an 8-year-old.
Yeah. Back. Oh, there you go. We're a fucking 8-year-old. Thank you. And she Children. Wants to know who sent them. And he's just like, there is no signature. That made me laugh so hard because she's like, who wrote them? There's no signature. Like, you're the fucking police, dude. Well, he's a judge, but it's like, if that's where it ended, like, SVU would not be a show. Like, if it was just like, shit. Well,
they weren't like, hand, fuck, they weren't hand rapists. Delivered.
Like, he took all these, like, fucking trophies and shit, but, like, he didn't sign anything. So.
He didn't leave a card or anything.
And that's this movie. Is like, this movie is mostly police being like, well, we've hit a wall. Like,
so many walls were hit.
Okay, so he says that Roth probably doesn't even know who wrote the notes himself. Maggie's like furious that he's doing this story. He calms her fears by saying that everyone in this town trusts her dad and he would never hurt him. Then Judge gets a call from the sheriff. We drive all the way out to Buck Mountain. Honestly, where I went every weekend. Let's just actually say Wednesday through Monday of every week in my 20s on Buck Mountain. And that's where this whole scene set up. Magpie sits with Judge the way she did with her dad in the truck when they first did on Buck Mountain. And he tells her she can never leave. You can never leave Buck Mountain. This place stays with you. So then we go to the woods. We've got the female sheriff. This woman's the sheriff. She has the authority of like, the woman who rings you up at the pharmacy at CVS, not like the, like where she's like, I'm going to guard you from the pharmacist.
Yes, yes.
But like,
do you need a consultation? You're going to have to wait over there. I'm going to take you over here and then you wait there.
She's basically just like a authoritative cashier, like at most. So we're going to do 2143 to 2311. Mine grinds my gears, but I'm like, you have no fucking authority over me.
Noticed it before because we weren't looking for it. It's been used recently.
Can you find out who it was?
Public land. Anybody can come through here whenever they want. Might get lucky, lift some prints off this stuff. Hope it matches a gun license.
Whoever it was, they would have seen Frank coming long before he saw them.
Then why not ambush him from there? If they were going to shoot him anyway, why use his own gun?
Which is another thing. Granted, those hikers mucked up the scene pretty bad when they found him. Still, if there was a struggle, there ought to be some sign of it.
Maybe he never had a chance. Those are Army MRE packages left behind in the blind.
Yeah. If those fellas saw him first, it's for damn sure they had him outgunned.
What fellas?
I'm getting a lot of those militia types running around up here. You know, playing soldier.
We've tracked them through here a few times. They would have recognized your dad right off.
So, are you saying they were waiting for him, or this was just some sort of coincidence?
Right now, we gotta consider every possibility.
Excuse me. In a big thing of ferns.
This is a ferning woods. I don't know what Colorado has, like, in terms of ferns.
Frank ever,
but this seems like a lot for me in terms of...
You two ever come up here when you were little?
A lot of woodsy ferns.
Yeah.
I'm going to look up Colorado fern life.
Oh, I've got 3 pages on that already.
A few pages.
They're on my feather. The back of my feather information. Feathers and ferns. You haven't seen my blog yet.
So this whole scene was like, you know, it was what it was. It was a brief breeze through on a crime scene that, you know, I never really understand where they're supposed to get, like, stuff in crime scenes in the woods anyway. It's so damp. Like, I wouldn't know where to start pressing for fingerprints around anywhere. Like, I would just be like... pressing on toadstools and, like, you know what I mean? Like, where are you supposed to find a fingerprint on that? That could be anything. That could be like a branch or a tree. Where do you really start?
It's a very good question. Also, they showed a guy with like some big like pincers or tongs. Like,
yeah.
Which I don't know. The whole thing. Yeah. It seemed like kind of a mess.
I love the idea of removing wetlands to like match it to tracks later in feet. Like, I love it when someone's like, oh, like that kind of like plant could have only grown in this forest.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. But that's not where we go with this.
Or dirt. Like, they find dirt and they're like, oh, that's from the.
What was a really good movie with that? It was like a really good movie with that.
With that kind of evidence, dirt evidence.
It was like a dirt evidence. Like, I literally...
I think it was called dirt evidence.
So Sam comes in while... Oh, Magpie's in... She goes back to the hospital. And oh, Jack...
I'm so sorry.
Oh, sorry.
In the woods. This just seems like a real, like, a real kind of like... It's just a bad misdirect. Like, they're like, there's militiamen. We've been tracking these militiamen in the woods.
Yeah, like what is militia even? Like, that's like a self-appointed sort of, like, in this scenario, is this like a self-appointed vigilante moment sort of thing?
Like a soldier of fortune or like some, like, or militias. Well, militias seemed like, there's all sorts of, I mean, like, you can start your own militia if you're rising up against the government or wanting to or something. But, like...
In Colorado, though, like, it's so... I bet there are everywhere. Anywhere that there's a lot of wood, there could be in my backyard a militia. That makes sense, actually.
Sure, but it's... Yeah, it's strange. The way they refer to it, almost like you can't tell.
Secondhand, like it's just like, well, oh, it's like, you know, it's like
playing my... like playing soldier.
Right. It's just like, oh, we got these militiamen.
Some actual, there could be terrorists, you know, there could be some like domestic terrorist activity going on. But
that's how it sounds to me. And it's like a lot of non-attention paid to that.
Totally. Like, oh, we've been tracking them. Clearly you haven't if, you're just finding some food.
And the sheriff is like, I just want better for her. Like, it's like they bring in this female sheriff and like she just seems, and she is so dumb throughout this whole movie. And I don't want that for her, but she's never ahead of the curve ever. No. Like, it's sad. So
it is. I really appreciate the casting and the woman in the role. I wish that both
Judge had been a woman. And
I wish it was written a little bit more, just giving her more to work with other than another dead end.
She is a Canadian hire for sure, though, because you get to hear the accent come through. I don't clip that scene because it's like there's too much in this movie that's like of such peak importance. And I will tell you that I had a like slight meltdown like when I was watching this movie, because I was like 35 minutes in and the lifetime counter was reading the total time, which is typically an hour and 27 minutes, and this movie was an hour and 25 minutes, and so a half an hour and I thought it was telling me I had 125 minutes left, and I was like, oh,
I'm not gonna make it.
No, like I was having a tough time, and it wasn't because I wasn't going to make it. I was just like, how are me and Ted going to make it through this podcast? Because we will don't want anyone to pass away. Like, so Magpie gets back to the hospital and Jack is standing in the room. Jack, the greasy guy, Jack Jr., we know, yes, is looking at her dad, and she freaks out and she's like, you're not allowed in here. And he like kind of is like, oh, sorry. And he lets himself out. So like he seems creepy, right? And then Sam comes in, who looks like Peter Dinklage.
Who?
Peter Dinklage. He looks like tall Peter. Like, doesn't facially he look exactly like Peter Dinklage?
There is a resemblance. Yeah.
It's like freaky because I'm like, oh, the part of people that like, because I'm not like in the, oh, Peter Dinklage is hot club, but like the part of people that think that would fucking love this guy. So come get your mans. Like, because he's tall. Peter Dinklage just lives in this man. So he's like, listen,
she's in, and first of all, she's in the goes from the hospital room to the
waiting break, like the snack
room
area.
It's like the hospital like cafeteria / break room.
It's like where the family machines cries. Yeah.
And then like a bunch of plates snacks stacked up on a trash can. It's very odd. Like it's, I mean, you know,
they tried their best. I want to know what if this was like the emergency room and like in a practice children's hospital, like in Canada, maybe like it does. Cause like the way that they have it set up is like the idea of a hospital, but it's not, totally. Maybe, I mean, there's no way this was real, but then also there was enough going on that I thought maybe this could be a hospital in some sense.
Yes. It was like they had two decent hallways. The only, and then this kind of break room, and then the only real kind of like, the fact that he never had his own room until the very end after the emergency surgery.
And he's like, the former sheriff.
He's just right near, unless he had such a deluxe setup that they had a reception area just for his room. But he's like, you know, they've tucked him like in the corner near this kind of reception area. Like you have expected like a copier to be nearby his bed or,
but I just like don't trust Lifetime enough to think that they would paint everything light blue and then put up like the red sticky things that say what, like it wasn't like a, cause I looked, it wasn't a placard. It was like those letters were stuck to the wall. And like, I just don't trust Lifetime to do that. Like, I think it must have been a children's play hospital.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, they could have done that.
No, but I see what you're saying. Yeah, no.
You know, like, it was like a little too, like, normally they just put up, like, a placard. But, like, it had the idea. This probably is the local. This is Degrassi. They probably use this for Degrassi.
Yeah.
My favorite show.
Because they did put up a placard later when we go to the newspaper. It's like a little cardboard sign that says The Herald.
It meant everything to me. I love that whole... Okay. Sorry. So then Sam comes in and Sam's like, well, they told me your dad's stable. And Meg just like will just be silent. She'll let Sam just talk for like an hour. And then she tells him, like, you know, the sheriff thinks it's a militia group that might have ambushed him. The sheriff's in way over their head. They need to call in the stateies. And he's like, give the sheriff a shot. She knows what she's doing. She knows what she's talking about.
She's pretty sharp.
Like, I've lived and breathed this. Nothing bad could happen when Sheriff Dolan was around. And like, basically, we find out he's created like a fantasy world, a time capsule. She thinks that the entire town lives under this like truth that nothing could happen to them. But in reality, like, nothing, it's not even her dad. It's just like nothing really could happen to these people. Like, it's a pretty small town. Like, it wouldn't benefit anyone to do crime here. It's this one rogue man. It's not her dad.
Yeah.
It's Jake Sr.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong?
Yeah.
Okay.
But this was a little bit, no, you're exactly right. I think this was a little confusing because it suddenly was like, it made it seem, the way she, her language made it seem like there was like, it's just like she was trying to infer that there was a secret, like that, you know, this whole fantasy world has been set up, but there's deep, dark evil here.
So he's like, you need to get some sleep. And then she goes on this tear and she's like, Sam, good old Sam, still hanging around, getting along with everybody. You don't have a clue, do you? We haven't seen each other in years and we're supposed to act like we know each other or something. And he goes, I know this isn't you talking. And she says, you know what? You don't know a damn thing. And then this is where I wrote, he looks like Peter Dinklage. And then she's crying outside the hospital, like on a van, like waiting to be seen. Like
on the front end of an ambulance.
She's like, this is where, like, I've been in that relationship where you're like, like, I want him to see me upset because then he'll know. And it's like, he won't unless he's the killer. Okay. So
nobody looked.
Right. So, then he comes out and he's like, look, Orion's belt. She goes, I can't see the stars where I live. I don't even look anymore. I've seen every failure, every weakness, every human frailty. I thought I could handle anything right now. There's always something I can do. I should be able to do something, but I can't. I can't do anything. And I don't want them to die. I don't want him to die. Like, who's them? So then they're eating at Sam's Diner, which, by the way, is Sam's Diner, bitch. Like, welcome to...
Yeah.
Sam is, like, fucking making America great again. He's owning his business right now. Sam's a Trumper. Agree, disagree?
Oh, agree.
Yeah.
Ultimately, agree, maybe. Agree.
He's a small business owner in Colorado. But this is great, though. This is what makes me think he might not be, because she's like eating his eggs and she's like, these are unreal. And he's like, I chopped basil up into him. It's my secret. And I'm like, oh, he's a basil boy. Like, maybe he's not a Trumper. He knows about fresh herbs.
That's true. Although, but later when I don't want to skip ahead too far, but he started to get a little like, he knew a little bit more about the judge than we thought. And
yeah,
there was some business stuff that he had participated in that seemed a little to me like, yeah.
And he's a.
But at this point,
they've got a history. Let's just say that these two have got a history.
Yes. Oh gosh.
She's like, thanks for always being there for me, and I know in lifetime that means that he probably skipped out of town, right? Or she skipped out of town, and like didn't tell him anything. There was maybe an engagement, and guess what? In this case, there was. We don't know what their relationship long term romantically was. By the way, LA, it's beaten down rain on this house right now. It's not a raccoon coming in my house. So
she ghosted him.
Yeah, she fucking ghosted him
before,
but like,
ghosting was like in vogue.
She goes, I just left without a word. We were friends forever. And he goes, look, Frank told me where you were. Frank is his name. She goes, that's not what I mean. And so basically, like, he's like, I know it's not what you mean. Look, what do you want me to say? You didn't like it here. It's not brain surgery. I wrote, I love it's not brain surgery. It's not brain surgery's classic. You throw that down anywhere, you can say it's not brain surgery to anything. So I wrote, I think Magpie is a selfish person who does what she does for a living because she has a God complex. I don't know why I went that fucking far. I went hard into Magpie here, but the diner's nice. She's like, acknowledges that. And he says he likes it there. The diner's great. The diner has a full bar.
Yeah, full bar.
That is not an easy permit to get.
Nice. I mean, the nice wood it looked like.
It looked like a beautiful, it looked really, really like beautiful and like carefully put together. And like, because now it's Sam's diner. He put a bid on the diner, but like, so we know whatever the diner was, it came with that. But now it feels like Sam's diner.
He's over there. He's angry, but he's cleaning a beer glass while he's talking.
He's like shining those water spots right out. He doesn't know about Finish Cleaner, which Ted Travel said told me all about. Finish to this day. I'll show you all my Finish after this. Do you know about Finish? Do you have a dishwasher? Okay, don't worry about it. I'll tell you when you do. When you get a dishwasher, Sammy, come back to me and Ted. So they have this like moment where I'm like, are they going to fuck? Right?
Yes.
But then no, she's like, I told Alice I'd go by the hospital. So then he drives her back and I wrote my note, Jesus, how much does she fucking need from him? And later on, we realize that she took her car to the hospital. Like, he's driving her back to the hospital where her car is. But yes. I was like, fucking lady, if it wasn't 2006, still call a cab, but like call a definitely an Uber. Like, you don't need this man to feed you, drive you around town, emotionally babysit you. Especially after you blew him off notoriously.
Big time.
I like, yeah, this man like resurrected like his pain, like it came through in this diner. So,
I just said, I have that scene. I just said it gets uncomfortable with an unspoken, very bland sexual tension.
Very bland sexual. The tension is right here, and I'm only going to play. It's really slight. It's 29:43 to 30:31. This is where I think the real sexual tension is happening, baby.
It's about Dad.
Zach Roth?
Wait, not this. Do you know him?
He writes for the Herald.
After this.
You lost me.
You have been gone a long time. Take a ride with me in the morning.
To where?
I want you to see for yourself. Things have changed around here a lot more than you know.
And this is Alice passed out next to Dad. You're right, the receptionist is right.
Alice.
This is Degrassi.
Why don't you go home? I can stay.
I kind of gotten used to looking after him. We're fine, honey.
I don't think that's the same actor that's playing the dad in the flashbacks.
I have completely agreed with that the entire time. That man playing the actor in the bed is not.
I don't know why or understand it, but.
Wait, by the way, do you hear that like blasting water stream out behind my window right here? Do you hear how it sounds like one stream from right here?
Yeah.
It's my Shark Tank convention. It's where I put my cheese grater in front of my storm drain so that the leaves won't catch.
Nice.
Fuck you, Robert Herjavec. You're a loser. I hope you lose all of your money. And I would love to go on Shark Tank someday just to prove to you what a loser you are. And you blocked me on Twitter, and I've never followed you, never added you at all. You are a billionaire who seeks out individual citizens. And I don't see how that makes you different than Donald Trump. And I'm tired of you taking your immigrant factory worker father's name and using it to further your career. So thank you. And that doesn't speak for Ted.
No, I'm down with Ted's, it. But
you wanna, you know what I like?
I think I missed something though.
Sometimes I just wake up. No, I wake up to so I put a cheese grater in front of my storm drain so the leaves don't get caught. And I would take it on Shark Tank, only to reject Robert Herjavec, who's my number one enemy in life. Wow. Loser. I don't like him.
Have you ever?
No, we've never had any interaction. I watched the program.
Gotcha.
And then I've written about it. I've written on my personal Twitter about how I don't care for Robert. Then one day I go to look him up, blocked me.
Fucking blocked you.
But I've never added him.
But you've used your name.
I've used his name, Roger Hirsch.
Oh, he's Googling, like, he's so Robert Hirschback.
So this said, like, he is, so either this billionaire, who I actually, you know, I would say he is doing it. Because he married a Dancing with the Stars, like, dance partner. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you're a loser. You would. Like, he left his wife of many years for this woman. So I'm like, you absolutely are the insecure bitch that would be checking her Twitter. And, like, I'm not going to believe it's a social media intern. Because if it was a social media intern, are they just searching for neg results on him? Or maybe they are because he's a bitch and he's like, I just want to check it after someone filtered out the neg comments. What do you think?
So if, oh, and if he blocks you, then
I mean, he must be searching his name. Yeah,
will,
like,
he still see it though? If he, like, does a search, won't he still?
I don't know if I'm blocked. Oh, I don't think not. So. Wow, how dark.
But yeah, that's.
I will say I'm a private citizen. I'm not a billionaire. I certainly am no threat to you, Robert Hirschback, and I don't understand why I'm blocked.
No, yeah, and I got to tell you, people, you know, when they get, when Robert goes in, they're not excited about it.
No.
It's you know,
no,
it's
my thing,
Mark.
My thing has always been, I would love an invention like my cheese grater so that I could go in and deny him. That's my whole thing, is I would love to go in and have him. I would rally him up. I would feed to him the whole time. I mean, now that he knows who I am, I'm not a private citizen anymore. I've been blocked, but I would love to go in and rile him up, feed to all of it, bring in some fucking strippers or what, I don't, you know, strippers, strip my drain, like, whatever. Like, I could do whatever I want to do and then get Robert reeling on my product and then be like, no, fuck you, bitch. Like, I don't fuck with that.
Listen to this. I don't think he's blocked me. Could I go in with an earpiece?
Mm.
You're feeding me everything.
I think that's where we are.
In my ear. And then
I burst through. Well, I think the producers
I'm a cipher for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get him all worked up. Do, you know, just say whatever you want me to say.
Yeah.
And then be like, guess what?
Tag team that shit.
Yeah. I think we could.
Well, like, I bet the producers fucking hate him enough. Like, I would hate him. Like, I do hate him. Like, so I would hate him if I was a producer. I don't hate him. That's, like, so ungodly. But, like, whatever. I'm, like, not a fan.
Yeah. We're talking TV terms here.
It's anyway. Like,
are you a fan of?
I don't want to skip past it.
Do you like anybody on, like, are you?
I love everyone else. Mr. Wonderful. Love him. Love Mr. Wonderful. Love Lori. Beth is a horn dog. Do you love how Beth is a horn dog? I'm sorry. What's her
name?
Barbara. Oh my God. Beth. Wait, I was thinking Bethany. Barbara's a horn dog. Bethany, I don't want on any of my TV. There's that.
Me and Bethany had our time. It was very specific. It's a time and a place.
Were you Bethany Ever After?
No. I'm just original Beth. Original
Real Housewives
with her and Jill. Like, that was like
a good time.
That was a good time.
It was sad to. I was sad to see it end. And honestly, nothing sadder than the death of Bobby Zarin ever. Like, literally, yeah. I took that really hard. I met Jill. She told me I look exactly like Jennifer Lawrence.
I'm laughing at your reaction.
No, I'm laughing. No, because the whole time she's like, Jennifer Lawrence. I'm gonna tag my makeup artist. You look exactly like Jennifer Lawrence. And I'm like, Do I, Jill Zarin? But like, it's weird because, like, she's of that generation that will do that to me. That's like, you look exactly like Emma Stone. And I'm like, no, I don't. Like, literally, I'm like 30. Like, I'm old. Like, so she's of that generation that will do that to me. And it's very sweet. But, like, so I got the opportunity to tell Jill while Bobby was alive that, like, I was like, Jill, I have set my standard at nothing less than a Bobby Zarin. Like, I have no need to get married. I will not get married unless it's a Bobby Zarin. And, like, I don't even mean financially. I just mean, like, the way he was, like, when Bethany was like, I don't want you to pick a side. He's like, well, there is no side. Like, I just loved it. Like, you just need a Bobby Zarin was so down, even in all of her bullshit, because Jill was full of the bullshit. Just Oh, a cotton candy of bullshit. Really, she was. Because it was fun. It's fun.
Yeah.
But it's like, you are a tangled person. He just stood by her. And he took care of Allie. And, you know, she seemed to feel very comfortable, especially towards the end. I don't like that Jill's dating already, but that's my personal cross to bear. And that said, you know, it is what it is. But.
Yeah, he was the one pure, one of the pure kind of human.
He was probably threads. The purest, yeah. For sure. And then Mark Cuban, do you have thoughts on Mark Cuban?
Oh, yeah. I've watched enough Shark Tank. I enjoy it. I don't know enough. Like, I think he's entertaining on the show and like. He, you know, I enjoy him on the show. I don't have, like, I don't know enough about him or care enough about him to be like, you know, to think that.
I just think Mark's the man that can and should fix Flint. Like, it's $255 million to fix Flint. He has the money to do that. That the returns that would earn him are endless. And I don't understand, like, when I look at him, like, Zuckerberg I understand because he's a fucking evil troll, but like Cuban, like, you're out here on the scene, honey, like, you're out here, like, America has goodwill for you, like, earn that goodwill back even more. I just don't understand why these like likable billionaires aren't out here doing it.
Yeah,
because it's a call, it's a phone call. Anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Agreed. So we go out to the parking lot. Meg's there. She's like, bloop, bloop. Okay, so then that's when I wrote, she's less shitty because her car's there. So we see the POV of a grizzly-sounding guy. I wrote, it sounds like he's breathing through sand. His breath is so, like, whatever.
Yes.
So this person watches Meg pull out, and he trails her. When we get home, we see the van pull up in the distance. Now we're going to hear Sam talking to Meg on that drive you told her about the night before. So, oh, wait.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so we, like, see the van, blah, 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 next morning.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's 31. So we didn't, when you see that van pass, you're thinking, like, she's not going to make it, like, through the night. This is the beginning of the torture scene.
Yeah.
For me, right? But no. Yeah. So not, 31, not even. We haven't gotten to the construction scene yet, honey. So it's 31:36 to 34:55 or 34:58.
Biggest developers in the state. They hired a new editor, new staff, including Roth. All of a sudden, we start reading about how growth is good for the economy. More jobs, new schools.
It's hard to argue with that.
The next year, Durango finishes a new ski lift. Caught on pretty quick. Suddenly, we got a lot of skiers looking for places to stay.
Let me guess, they started putting up condos.
Fast as the cement to dry. The more they build, the more people came, the more they needed.
Now Main Street looks more like a theme park than an old mining town.
There were a few grumbles about that, but mostly everyone just wanted their piece of the pie.
Having property value go up will do that to people.
Real estate went up all right, but so did everything else. Property taxes, utilities, roads. All of a sudden, people are having their doubts about Durango.
Wow, this development is huge.
Sure is. This is Highland Estates. At least that's what it was gonna be.
Before Durango decided to sidestep some permits.
Sidestep?
They were in a hurry. Figured it was just a formality anyway, started the work without him. Until somebody found out.
My dad.
Didn't waste much time getting the ball rolling, let me tell you.
They didn't know who they were messing with.
Town got an injunction to stop the work. Larango tried to ignore it, so folks filed a lawsuit against the company. Put him under a microscope, too. Brought in the EPA, OSHA, you name it.
What did Larango do?
Brought in a bunch of high-priced lawyers. It was a big mistake. Folks just started demonstrating the other Larango job sites. Pretty much shut them down.
Nothing like a mob of angry locals.
But things started to get nasty after that. Threats started flying both ways, a couple of mysterious fires, tires slashed, a few fights even.
My dad never said anything about this.
He had his hands full. What he wouldn't do is arrest the protesters. Said they weren't the ones breaking the law, which pissed off Larango to no end.
The company that just happened to own the Herald.
So there hasn't been a good word about him in that paper ever since.
Larango must have lost millions.
Easy.
And they blame my dad.
Oh, yeah.
Enough to try and kill him?
Whoa, slow down. I brought you up here so you'd understand Ross' witch hunt.
What if somebody decided that slamming my dad in the papers wasn't enough? What if they decided to get rid of him?
Yeah, but bad-mouthing him in the paper to murder, that's a big jump.
Sam, I live in the city. People get murdered for $5.
Yeah, but this isn't the city.
This is a lot more than $5.
Zach Roth is going after my father. Roth works for the Herald, and the Herald is owned by Larango Corp.
Which proves what exactly?
Dad caught them breaking the law. Cost them a lot of money. Can you think of a better motive for killing him?
No, but I can't think how killing him would change any of that.
People listen to my father. As long as he stands in their way, how can Larango hope to change anyone else's mind?
You've been away, Maggie. You don't know the good things that company's done around here. They brought in jobs, donated money. They practically built the new ball field on their own.
I'm not saying they put it in a memo. I'm talking about one person. That's all it would take.
They got 60 people working for them. You tell me, which one pulled the trigger?
Thank you so much for listening to season 4 of Mother May I Sleep With podcast.
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that, as well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please, join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.